Blog Talk Radio.
Spectrum technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yeah. What's up? What is going on? You are here live, and this is the Sunday, November 3rd episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the leader of the Boxing Source on social media. You can follow us on Facebook by going on to the Boxing Source. You can also follow us on Instagram at the Boxing Source. You can also go to Twitter, look up Boxing Source 2, and follow us there. And subscribe to the YouTube channel by going to the Boxing Source. Number to dial to talk boxing, 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue. And you'll be able to talk live on the show to give your take on what has happened over the weekend, as we have a lot to cover in this particular episode. We had a lot of action in the squared circle, particularly in the U.S. We had three events that were televised. One was on ESPN. One was on Fox Sports 1, and one was on DAZN. So we will be going through those particular cards one way or another this particular show, and then see if we have time to look ahead to the World Boxing Super Series final that will take place in a bantamweight division between Naoya Inoue and Nonito Donaire there. So that is what we have on slate for this particular show. Want to, you'll get right into it. As you had the fight card that was over in the MGM Grand, as you had the WBO Light Heavyweight Championship on the line, as Sergey Kovalev was defending that WBO title against Saul Canelo Alvarez. You had Kovalev, who had won the WBO title back this year in February in his rematch with Eleider Alvarez. Then he was able to defend it successfully against Anthony Yard, which set him up for this fight against Canelo Alvarez. While Alvarez did have his fight in May against Daniel Jacobs, where he had won the IBF middleweight championship, tried to see if they could get a fight put together for him in September. That's usually his schedule, one fight in May and one fight in September. They couldn't get anything put together for him against the WBO middleweight champion and Demetrius Andrade. And then they tried to put something together between him and Sergey Derevianchenko, as Derevianchenko was the IBF mandatory, and that mandatory was called by the IBF. They couldn't get that put together, and that made it to where he had to give up that IBF middleweight championship. And so that had it to where he had to find a opponent. But, you know, it kind of like seemed that once Sergey Kovalev defeated Anthony Yard, that you basically had this fight going to take place there in the light heavyweight division. Canelo Alvarez wanted to see if he could become a world champion in a fourth weight class, as he has held the title at super welterweight, middleweight, super middleweight, and then going up to light heavyweight and seeing if he could get the win. And so that's what, you know, we were looking forward to here, this particular battle. Leading into the fight, there were some questions on both sides, you know, seeing if, you know, Canelo could handle going around in the wing at that weight. And if, you know, Sergey Kovalev was, you know, on his last legs in this particular fight. But that was something that we had to find out the answer last night at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. And, you know, the fight started off with Sergey Kovalev trying to execute his plan, what he has been doing since the start of this year, particularly with the Eleder Alvarez fight, and with him switching trainers over to Buddy McGirt. He has, you know, utilized the jab, used that as his main weapon against his opponent, and have that be a setup to, you know, what he could do later on down the line in the particular fight. So that is how he opened the fight, throwing the jabs, throwing the jabs, throwing the jabs, and seeing what else he could get out of that. And, you know, for the first couple of rounds, looked like he was kind of successful with, you know, with those jabs, and that he was, you know, kind of like being more active there in that particular, you know, round against Canelo, while Canelo looked like he wanted to put his guard up, seeing where Kovalev was going to be, and then try to counter that jab with power shots. So we saw what was going down in those first couple of rounds with Sergey Kovalev kind of like establishing that jab of his. And, you know, from that, you would see what their response would be coming from Canelo Alvarez. Canelo Alvarez, on the flip side, didn't really, you know, approach this particular fight with throwing jabs. He wanted to see if he could get in, get on the inside, work Kovalev with the power shots, and then eventually break him down later in the fight. So we didn't necessarily see Canelo really box with Kovalev. He just, you know, stayed patient, was having his high guard up to block the jabs, and then when he was able to get close enough, throw power shots. And so that was mainly what we got out of the, you know, first few rounds in this particular fight. But then Alvarez started to get, you know, more patient there in the ring, seeing what Kovalev was doing. And for me, it just didn't look like Kovalev wanted to throw that right hand of his, because when he was throwing the left jab, Canelo was coming back with a left hook. and that left hook was going to the body. And so with those left hooks coming to the body, and with Canelo being a much faster fighter than Kovalev is, that was something that, you know, Kovalev was looking out for while the rounds were going through. And that kind of like was a major mistake for Kovalev, as you got to be able to use your money punch as long as you have your money punch. You can't be reluctant in throwing your money punch because you're kind of scared at what's going to be coming back for you. So he didn't necessarily take those risks there in those middle rounds or so to let that right hand try to come in. Now, there were a couple of times when he did connect with some of the power shots, but Canelo Alvarez, over the past few fights, has worked on perfecting his craft in rolling with the punches that are thrown by his opponents. We've seen that in his last few fights, the two fights against Gennady Golovkin, and in his fight earlier this year against Daniel Jacobs. There were times when he saw the power shots coming and just rolled with the punch and didn't take the full brunt of the punch that was coming back at him. So while Kovalev was able to connect with, you know, some hooks and some uppercuts in the middle rounds, he was able to roll with most of those punches. So it didn't really take much of a toll on him as, you know, rounds and rounds and rounds, you know, went by. So that's so kind of like what we were seeing in this fight as the fight, you know, moved on. And I just, seeing the fight live, I just didn't necessarily have Canelo Alvarez with the large advantage in the scores, with my scores. Thought that, you know, even though Kovalev wasn't really connecting well with the punches, he was becoming more active, and it wasn't like Canelo had that much success with the power shots that he was controlling a majority of the fight. He stayed within his pace, but it wasn't to the level where I felt that Kovalev was dropping his overall activity over the course of the fight. I thought that his, you know, punching rate, or his punching stats, kind of like were consistent round by round, and that there was, you know, no real damage coming from the punches that Canelo was throwing that, you know, did make Kovalev drop his overall work rate, but he just had to limit the types of punches that he was throwing at Canelo Alvarez. And so, you know, I felt that he was still, you know, sticking with the pace, but just jabbing and jabbing and jabbing. However, there was, you know, nothing really major up until the middle rounds where Kovalev started to throw some power shots with any type of emphasis. So he may have had a lead going through 8 rounds or going through 9 rounds, something like that. But it wasn't much of a lead, if there was any, as Canelo was still, you know, going at the pace that he was going at. In the 10th round, you kind of like saw a couple of good little exchanges between both fighters with the power shots that were being thrown, and that you kind of like saw that it was a fight that was hanging in the balance, but it wasn't like a back and forth close fight that had a lot of action in comparison to, like, say, the fight that we had previous week with Josh Taylor and Regis Progress, where, like, for eight consecutive rounds in that fight, you could have said that one fighter won one round, the next fighter won the next round, and then it went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But here, you didn't really get that much action to where you would say that it would be tough to, you know, score rounds between either fighter, or where it would be an alternating round by round score where Canelo would win the first round and Kovalev would win the second round and Canelo would win the third or something like that. You really didn't get that type of a visual experience where you could see that either one fighter clearly won the round or that another fighter clearly won the next round, as it was just not much, you know, overall activity as far as, like, punches being landed, significant punches being landed. But going into the 10th round, it seemed like things started to pick up a little bit. And then it went to the 11th round, and, you know, kind of like found it interesting that, you know, in between those rounds, in between the 9th and 10th and the 10th and 11th, that on Canelo's corner, Eddie Reynoso told Canelo, like, just stay patient, stay patient. It's gonna come. You're gonna get that big break. It's gonna come, and then you'll be able to, you know, take advantage. And so, in the 11th round, you kind of like saw that the pace of the fight still be the same, with Canelo still trying to throw those power shots with a great emphasis, and then he was able to connect with your right hand that kind of backed Kovalev up to the ropes a little bit, but then Kovalev was still throwing his jab, and then Kovalev went over to his left a bit while he was around that corner, and then went to the left and was still by the ropes, and then Canelo was able to get around the guard of Kovalev with the left hand to hit Kovalev on the temple and knock around Kovalev's equilibrium just enough for him to drop his guard, and then Canelo followed through with a big right hand straight to the chin of Kovalev to put Kovalev, like, straight down to the canvas, you know, knees, you know, falling down to his knees, and then laying there on the ropes. And he didn't, you know, basically move for a few seconds. And the fight was called right then and there, pretty much after, you know, a count of two or three, giving Canelo the knockout victory in the 11th round, having him win the WBO light heavyweight championship, making him a four division champion. And, you know, he just has that, you know, he just holds that one loss to Floyd Mayweather still, and 53rd professional win with this 36th knockout. And, you know, he's just now, you know, holding that WBO light heavyweight championship, and, you know, many would consider with this win that they place him as far as, like, being around the top or at the top of the pound-for-pound list. Of course, you have the likes of Terence Crawford and Vasyl Lomachenko that's up there. But Canelo Alvarez is the one that you know, I would say you know, has the resume that clearly surpasses you know, everyone else that's out there. So I mean, you know, my thing is that you gotta put him up there, you know, at number one up to this particular point. He's been, like I said, he's, you know, defeated the likes of Austin Trout, Miguel Cotto, Gennady Golovkin, and now Sergey Kovalev, to, you know, make him one of the best fighters in the sport of boxing, if not the best fighter in the sport of boxing. And, you know, it kind of like shows that, you know, that regardless of what the challenge is that's out there for him, he's willing to, you know, step up and take that challenge and then, you know, conquer that challenge, then move forward with that. So, you know, I kind of like feel that, you know, Canelo wanted this challenge and felt that, you know, he would be able to defeat Sergey Kovalev, even though, you know, Kovalev was the much older fighter and kind of like showed that he was a little bit slow in this previous fight against Anthony Yard. They had Alvarez saying that Kovalev was the number one ranked like heavyweight in the world. But, I mean, we saw, you know, what happened a couple weeks ago when Artur Beterbiev was able to defeat Oleksandr Gvozdik and become a unified light heavyweight champion. And I feel that Beterbiev is currently the number one ranked light heavyweight out there. So if Canelo wants to have a challenge, that would be a challenge for Canelo. Stay at light heavyweight, go after the unified champion in Artur Beterbiev and see if he could defeat him for the WBC and IBF titles that Beterbiev currently has. You do have the WBA champion, Dmitry Bivol, but not a lot of people have that much confidence in Bivol there at light heavyweight for him to, you know, defeat a guy like Beterbiev or Canelo Alvarez if he stays at 175 pounds. After the fight, Canelo was saying that that he would like to, you know, see if he'll have a fight over at 175 pounds or 160, or, you know, maybe something where he could be at 165 pounds and, you know, be able to just have a fight there in the super middleweight division. He was also asked if, you know, potential third fight with Gennady Golovkin would be out there and would that be a challenge for him. And he said that for Golovkin, it's not really a challenge for him, and that they fought 24 rounds, and, you know, he beat him, basically beat him in the last fight. He said it's really not a challenge, but if it represents business, then why not? You know, they feel, a lot of people feel that that is the most lucrative fight that's out there for Canelo Alvarez is a third fight between him and Gennady Golovkin. But I've kind of like stated this earlier, and, you know, I'm sticking to it. I'm not really amped up for a third fight between Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin. I'm just not. I've said it, you know, in the past, pretty much over that, you know, past year and a half, when that first fight took place, and you know, when the second fight took place, that I wasn't really, you know, looking forward to those fights, as I, you know, I was, of course, I've said it many times over, I'm not a fan of Gennady Golovkin. It just is what it is. And everybody can be a fan of Gennady Golovkin, all right? So for him to get that fight there against Canelo Alvarez, and the way that he got the first fight with Canelo Alvarez was, you know, pretty much shady, as in he was able to have the WBC try to force that fight, and Canelo wasn't buying it. So that's why he ended up giving up that WBC title at the time. So it seemed like for me that Gennady Golovkin was getting way too many breaks, way too many chances. So after the second fight, when Canelo Alvarez clearly defeated Gennady Golovkin, he pretty much said that he was done with Golovkin, particularly when the negotiations went to the 11th hour, so to speak. So after he got that win, and he just said, you know what, I'm moving on. I beat you. I clearly beat you. I don't want to deal with you. And that should be that. I would like to see Canelo either stay in the 175-pound division, see if he could get another title there, or face Artur Beterbiev. But I don't think that the Beterbiev fight will, you know, be next, unless if they say that it's a very lucrative fight for, you know, Canelo to take, and for Beterbiev not to defend one of those titles against the mandatory. So there is that, and I also want him to, or I would say that I want Canelo Alvarez to go back to 160 pounds and face Demetrius Andrade. If you're going to have that WBA title, yeah, I know you got the IBF title stripped. Yeah, I know that you're elevated to the WBC franchise champion. But many people wanted to see you kind of like become the undisputed middleweight champion, which you couldn't do since you got stripped by the IBF and then elevated to franchise champion. But if you did have that fight against Demetrius Andrade this year, then you could have said that, hey, I pretty much defeated everybody that was at the top of the middleweight division and been the clear-cut, you know, undeniably fighter, or undeniable number one fighter in the middleweight division. So there's that. Also, there's a possibility that he could fight Callum Smith at 168 pounds. He does have that WBA world championship, while Callum Smith is the super champion. Canelo defeating Rocky Fielding for that WBA championship almost, you know, a year ago. But, you know, nothing lined up for him against Callum Smith. So there is that. And then there was also talk of the WBO super middleweight champion Billy Joe Saunders possibly having a fight with Canelo Alvarez that could be set up for May of next year. So there's a lot of possibilities that are out there for Canelo Alvarez, whether it's in the light heavyweight division, the super middleweight division, or the middleweight division. out there where he could have a big fight. So that is what we're looking into for Canelo Alvarez. Right now, getting a caller on the line from the 205. What's going on? You're on the Boxing Source Radio Show.
Hey, what's going on, James? It's Mike Grady calling out of Atlanta. How you doing, man?
Doing good, brother Mike, doing good. Just gone through the fight analysis of Canelo Alvarez and Sergey Kovalev, with Alvarez getting that 11-round knockout victory over Kovalev to win that WBO light heavyweight championship. What did you think of the fight? Did you think Kovalev took a dive, like some people are saying, including Badu Jack?
Kovalev took a dive? That's what people saying?
Yeah.
No, I don't think Kovalev took a dive. I think that... Did you see him get hit?
Yes, I did.
Think people fake that? Like, okay, there are some hits that look more fake than others. Like, I was not here, you know, to watch this fight, but, you know, the phantom punch that Ali did on Liston, somebody could say that was a fake punch, right? Just the way that it happened and it looked kind of peculiar. But if you get hit like how he got hit with three punches, you know, the overhand right, the left hook, then the straight right hand, and you literally, your faculties get separated from your senses, I just don't know about that. And from my point of view, Kovalev was in the fight. Like, it was we all knew that Canelo was going to win the fight if it went to a decision. At the same time, I think some of the judges had Canelo up by one or two rounds at the time of the stoppage, two of them, I mean, and then the other one had a tie. And so, for
yeah.
me, I didn't count the rounds. I might have had Canelo up by two rounds, and then I had a couple even-ish rounds. I would have to go on Facebook to look at my scorecard. But Kovalev won some rounds, and he definitely won the early rounds to me, you know, where he was jabbing and kind of controlling distance. And you could
mm-hmm.
tell that Canelo made a concerted effort to be patient, which I think that was the smart thing. The one thing I don't think he did enough, and I guess I understand, because he said it was tough for him to get to the body to get close because he didn't want to get hit and get to the body, but he didn't go to the body enough, in my opinion. Like, he went there, and then, like, he landed one body shot maybe in round two or three, and then Kovalev's hand was down. His right hand was down the whole time because
yeah.
that one body shot, it was a great body shot, by the way, and it was just, you know, it was just one shot that was landed, and you could, it just literally, Kovalev's hands was away from his face the whole, like, next couple rounds. And so, do I think it was Kovalev taking a dive? No. I mean, okay, I can see where people are coming from, because Kovalev was not necessarily trying to be that aggressor that he normally tries to be. Like, he wasn't throwing the right hand with the intent of knocking Canelo out. And so, but
right.
I mean, conventional wisdom tells us the few times that he did throw the right hand with a little more oomph than just a, you know, just a straight connecting, let you know I'm here right hand, he got countered. And even with Deontay Wilder, when he fights Luis Ortiz, he can't put a lot on his shots. Deontay Wilder going to have to, you know, jab, and instead of jabbing on his front foot, he kind of got to jab off his, I'm not calling it back foot, but he can't put his weight on his front foot. And so I'm saying that to say Kovalev was kind of doing the same thing, in that, you know, normally Kovalev fights, you know, going forward. He fights off his front foot. And so as a coach, you train him that's what Canelo's looking for. He's looking for it. He's going to hit your ass really hard. And he might hurt you in between your punch if you try to fight moving forward off your front foot. So what he did was he fought, like, I'm not calling off his back foot, but he fought, but he still had his weight transition on his back foot to where he could get out the way, it seemed like. Like, he wasn't necessarily trying to throw the two after that punch, but he just wanted to be able to, when he punched, to be able to get out the way when he figured something was coming back. And so just because he wasn't out there trying to go, you know, go for broke and knock Canelo out, does that mean that he wasn't trying to win? No, because I think the game plan that he had would have made it a close but unanimous decision if it continued to go the way it went. It would have been a close but unanimous decision for Canelo, and Canelo would have probably won by two rounds or you know, depending on the last couple rounds, you know.
Last couple rounds, yeah.
Because
you were talking about the scorecards, and two of them had Canelo up 96-94 with one score being 95-95 going into that 11th round. So he could have, you know, closed out the last two rounds and would have been able to get like a unanimous decision. Or if Kovalev, you know, tried to, but if Kovalev ended up winning those last two rounds, then it would have ended up as a majority draw because you would have had, you know, two judges that would have ended up scoring about 114-114, which would have overrode what the, you know, the last judge would have had, would have been a two-point win for Kovalev. So,
so I don't see how they're saying that he took a dive because, like, sure, he wasn't trying to knock Canelo out, but again, he was in it to win by boxing.
To win it. By boxing.
Yeah.
Right. And the thing is, that's what he did. That's what he did against Eleider Alvarez in the rematch. You know, he wasn't like going in there to, you know, basically knock him out. He was just, you know, going in there, outboxing him, frustrating Eleider Alvarez, and then eventually, you know, getting a win because there was nothing that Alvarez could have done that, you know, really would have been much of an answer for Kovalev's new approach that he had in that particular fight.
And people act like Kovalev is the same fighter that he was. Kovalev don't go into fights anymore trying to knock people out in the first six rounds because he understands now that if he does that in this top-level competition, he's going to get his ass knocked out by round 10, round 8, round 10, like he did with Andre Ward, like he did with Eleider Alvarez, because he, you know, let his wide go. Well, maybe the Alvarez fight, he just probably got caught. I don't know. But, you know, he understands now. People know his blueprint. If he let his wide go in the first six rounds, he ain't got nothing to give in round 7, round 8. So,
right.
With that being said, he's an older fighter. Shit, Bernard Hopkins should have taught him this, which I think he probably learned from that fight. That's what Bernard Hopkins was trying to do, you know, like limit the action in terms of, you know, land the clean punches for a few punches, but limit the action and then have it at such that it's a pace that you can make it to round 12. While Floyd Mayweather had exceptional win and he had better win than most people, that is exactly what he did too. He limited the action and he landed clean shots to where he wasn't exerting himself throwing 100 punches around like Paul Williams did and getting tired when it comes to round 10, round 12. He threw 20, 30 punches, landed about 10, 15, and, you know, and had a 50% connect rating. And then by the time he got to round 12, hell, he can do that all night. That's a firm match.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know,
yeah, I don't agree with him saying he took a dive. That's BS, man.
Yeah, that's not.
That takes away from Canelo. How could you take that away from Canelo? Like, sure, Canelo cherry picked in a sense, but like, really, you gonna take away from the pound for pound number one fighter in the world?
Yeah, that's something that, you know, people gotta, you know, take into account is that, you know, this is something that is marked as an achievement by Canelo Alvarez. So, you know, my thing is that why would you, you know, want to take that away from Canelo Alvarez? It's that he's one that's, you know, in the ring doing the work and being able to take on a guy that is, you know, at least 15 to 18 pounds north of where Canelo usually is. So It's not like, you know, they say that for other fighters that come up from middleweight or something like that to light heavyweight and, you know, win the light heavyweight title. You know, Bryan Hopkins was able to be, you know, go from being middleweight champion and then going up to light heavyweight, you know, defeating, Antonio Tarver. So they didn't say that Tarver was, you know, basically taking a dive there or something like that. So why try to discredit what Canelo Alvarez was doing in this particular instance? So, you know, with this win, like I was saying, he, you know, was like 50, you know, had his 53rd win of his pro career and his 36th knockout. And I said that there are multiple possibilities what his next fight would be, as he'll probably be playing for sometime in May of next year. So what do you think would be Canelo's next move in this instance?
Well, I'm going to say two things. It seemed like Badu Jack want to be next by like talking and, like, and you know, picking with Canelo, because Canelo prideful in that if you say something about him, he's going to come see about you.
Right.
And, you know, like I get – it seemed like Badu Jack was going to pester his way into a fight, you know, into a good payday, because Badu Jack himself, I love Badu Jack. Badu Jack is a workman. You got to give it to Badu Jack. Up until his last fight, well, you could tell Badu Jack was going down, but Badu Jack on a payday and smart, know he need to get out this fight game, because yeah, he has declined, and
yeah,
that's why he fighting what's his name from Montreal. He fight out of Montreal.
Jean Pascal.
That's why he's fighting Jean Pascal, because he has to fight these level fighters now, because he ain't got too many more fights that he can fight top level young fighters, like, and being real, without his clock exponentially going out. Like, you know, his meter is running and is running pretty low, but if he fight these young, strong champions, it's going to be a lot quicker for him to go. I love Badu Jack, but Badu Jack want a payday, it seemed like. And I don't knock him for it. Like, I get it. What's next for Canelo? What I could tell you what's not next. Better be Ev ain't next. Better be Ev.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
see it.
It's too large. Canelo understand this. Better be Ev is a big boy. Better be Ev. So I'm not saying Canelo could not hurt him, but it appears I would question if Canelo's shots. How many shots Canelo would have to land before he actually broke the shield and actually got beneath the shield and start, like, you know, really affecting Better Biev. And I believe Better Biev's win is better than Canelo. So with those two things, go ahead.
No, I was saying, well, is that, and is that, you know, Better Biev is able to take shots a lot better. He comes forward against anybody, and he's able to take one or two shots in order to get what he wants to get in on the inside. So, you know, what you saw from Canelo Alvarez in this fight against Sergey Kovalev was the same thing that Better Biev was doing against Oleksandr Gvozdik. And once he was doing that and stayed consistent with that, he eventually broke down Gvozdik and then went upstairs to, you know, overwhelm him and get the stop his victory to win, though, that WBC title from Gvozdik. And, you know, I kind of like see the same thing happening against Canelo if they did fight each other. But there might be another potential fight that was floating around there in the light heavyweight division that people were talking about. But before I bring that up, I have another caller in here from the 813. What's going on? You're on the Boxing Source Radio Show.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Trug calling from Tampa. And even just to chime in on what Mike was saying, despite the fact that Canelo called out Better Biev, said, and main thing he said, he looks for great fights. He wants to be a legend. So, yeah, title in four divisions. He's definitely on his way. The second Mexican to ever have a title at 125. Definitely, no, all those things are very notable. Number one pound-for-pound fighter. Cool. But like I said, with who's next? Honestly, if I was Canelo, I'd be targeting Bivol. That's what I would be targeting, right? not known for a lot of power, and look rather typical here in his last couple fights, right? But like I said, same opinion. He Canelo does not want to see Beterbiev no time soon. I mean, like I said, the guy is just a tremendous puncher. He's relentless. He can take a punch, like you guys said. He's rough, rugged, and strong, and it's a lifetime participant at 165. So, yeah, you look for great fights, but at the same time, they have to be smart about who they plot their course against. But even just last night, it was just, even though Canelo got the 11-round knockout, but he still had to go through that. But at the same time, I'm glad that he's able to answer some questions about that, about fighting at 175. The weigh-in came in at 174, pretty much around the same thing during fight night. He didn't look sluggish. He had good power, good movement, things like that, things that you want to see. So basically, it looked exactly like he belonged in there. It didn't look like a fish out of water like Mikey Garcia did when he moved up to 147, which is great to see. Although Kovalev wasn't throwing hard punches the entire fight, but quite a few times he caught Canelo clean, whether it be from a jab and a few straight rights here and there, things like that. And you know, Canelo took it very well, very well, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Never got hurt, never got phased, from what I can tell. So it's a good fight. So, but at the same time, if he wants to continue to fight at 175, me personally, I would target Bivol as that fight could be made. I forgot who Bivol is signed with, so I'm not sure if there's going to be a promotional rip that gets the whip of that title fight. But there's so much that he can do at this point, whether it be at 160. He even said himself during the press conference that it's hard for him to drop down to 160. So it looks like he's probably going to stay at 68, 175. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see who he picks and where he goes.
So I have a comment right after from what Terrell said, James.
Yep.
So I couldn't have said it better. Canelo should only – it's only smart for him to fight Beterbiev only when Beterbiev gets compromised. I couldn't have said it better than Terrell saying that. Like, I didn't put that into words, but I'm glad he put it into words. That is so true. He fights Beterbiev once Beterbiev gets compromised. Once Beterbiev gets in a fight to where he is compromised, that's when he can fight him. Up until then, yeah, it's not financially worth it. It's not legacy worth it, you know. And so my question to Terrell is, do you think that B-Ball could outbox Kovalev? I mean, not Kovalev, Canelo, sorry. Did you get that, Terrell?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But no, I'm not saying Bivol, he's looked typical, regular last couple of fights. Nothing special. Nothing that's gotten up to the point where he's at right now. So I don't think he could actually outbox Canelo. And you guys look back to Canelo Floyd Mayweather. I saw a post on Twitter where everyone was kind of highlighting Canelo's head movement now, right? And who taught him that? In a sense, Floyd, because Floyd just schooled him so bad, made him miss time and time again, and then came back kind of with a good solid right or something like that. And Canelo
yep.
didn't always have that in this game. And, of course, if you're a good boxer, you have to learn from your mistakes, learn from your previous fights, and even learn from some of your opponents. So you look at that, and Canelo, I'm not saying he's mastered head movement now, but he has a pretty down pat where he's able to avoid punches, and then fire back with some good power in return. So he has a good head movement and something like that. That will benefit him from fighting Bivol, who's not a high punch output person, and Bivol, he's just technically sound. He's not good. He's not great. He's just sound, you know. So I can definitely see Canelo outboxing him.
Because you think Canelo would land cleaner shots on him?
Definitely.
Yeah, I'll have to look at B-Ball. Like, I watch B-Ball fight, but I have to watch him again in those higher-profile fights to make a decision on that. I haven't critiqued
him.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know,
he hasn't looked, fairly good. I mean, I saw him last year against against Isaac Chalemba. Then he had his fight against Sean Pascal. And recently he was, you know, able to be fit in the card to defend his title against Lennon Castillo. And it didn't look like he could, you know, go straight through Lennon Castillo, even though Castillo was just, you know, put in there as the 15th ranked contender in the WBA rankings. So, you know, I'd have to see who else he could possibly fight. There isn't, you know, much that's out there in the WBA rankings. John Pascal is still, you know, ranked high in the WBA, and he has that fight against Battle Jack.
And that's for a belt too, right?
The Pascal Battle Jack.
Yeah, Pascal got a belt.
Right? That's like the WBC silver title or WBA some other WBA minor title. So he holds two titles that are highly ranked in the WBC and the WBA. So that's what, you know, they have. And as far as like the light heavyweight scene in general, Beterbiev is the unified champion, but he does have a mandatory lined up against the the IBF mandatory, who is Meng Fan Long. So they're putting that fight together, trying to lock that fight down. But on the other side, you have Gilberto Ramirez, who is a former super middleweight champion. That's also a top contender. So that would be an interesting fight for Beterbiev later on down the line if he doesn't have a unification fight or something like that. But if Canelo ends up moving back down from light heavyweight and doesn't really do much with that belt, then you'll have a vacant title out there for maybe Gilberto Ramirez to, you know, try to get. So that would be an interesting situation. But sometimes with the rules with these boxing organizations, they'll, you know, have somebody like Canelo Alvarez hold that belt for a good amount of time before he's, you know, able to fight in that particular weight class, putting that title on the line. So, you know, that's kind of like an interesting situation there, the light heavyweight division. But, you know, with Canelo Alvarez, he's the man. He calls the shots there in the sport of boxing. So wherever he goes, everybody else goes with him in that particular case. On the flip side, you have Sergey Kovalev that did, you know, lose big, got pretty much crushed. The crusher got crushed in with that right hand, but he was able to get up. He was able to shake it off and recover, and, you know, did kind of like make some comments. And one of the interesting things that he did say was that he did get this fight with Canelo Alvarez, but he wanted to have a fight to unify in the light heavyweight division once again. And so he said that those fights didn't, you know, get put together, which kind of is interesting because on the one side, they already had made the unification between Beterbiev and Gvozdyk. So the only thing that was left was him versus Dmitry Bivol. And from last year, they were trying to put that fight or make that fight happen. But the problem was at that time, you had Kovalev lose to Eleider Alvarez. So we had to have that rematch first before, you know, trying to make that fight. So I guess in between the time that he won the title back from Alvarez until, you know, I guess after he defended against Anthony Yard, that they couldn't put a fight together between him and Dmitry Bivol. So that kind of like, to me, says a lot about Dmitry Bivol, is that you could have had a shot to go ahead and face Kovalev, but didn't necessarily do it. Or, you know, Kovalev was saying that Bivol's side didn't want to do it. So I kind of like found that to be interesting there in that instance. In the co-feature bout, they had Ryan Garcia going up against Romero Duno, where you had this fight kind of like being semi-built up as Romero Duno is the guy that Ryan Garcia didn't necessarily want to fight. And I heard that during the fight, while the fight was happening, that Brian Kenny was saying that, well, Ryan Garcia was going through that back and forth with Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy Promotions. He was supposed to be part of a fight card where Jaime Munguia was there over in Monterrey, Mexico, I think it was, and he was supposed to be the co-feature. But the guy from Philadelphia ended up getting arrested by the U.S. Marshals the day before the fight. And so Ryan Garcia didn't have a dance partner. And they were saying that Romero Duno could have stepped in. And they put out a rumor that Ryan Garcia didn't necessarily want that fight. But I kind of like said that Garcia never was one to say that he wouldn't want to fight Romero Duno. So they were able to get this fight, put this fight together, and Garcia ended up just washing Romero Duno with his speed and his power to, win a vacant minor lightweight title in the WBC and hold the WBO or NABO lightweight title. So he's there at 19-0, and in the lightweight division where you have, WBC champion Devin Haney, unified champion Vasyl Lomachenko. You have the thing with the IBF lightweight championship, where in December that'll be defended as Richard Comey will be fighting Teofimo Lopez. So Ryan Garcia is putting his name out there as a future contender there in the lightweight division. Any thoughts about Ryan Garcia there at lightweight?
I tell you what, I'm not totally sold on him yet, and the only reason why I say that, just he seems a bit frail for the elite of the division at lightweight. I'm just not sold on him yet. I mean, I know he's winning. He has a great backing with social media. I get that. That's all necessary to become a great fighter and gain popularity and gain things from that popularity. But as an actual fighter, I don't see him being on that elite level yet. And quite frankly, I'm not sure if he can get there. Really, I think he's soft. that's really what I think of the kid. No disrespect, but I just think he's soft, So, but I don't really see him getting there as of yet. Man, I know he blew his opponent out yesterday in the knockout or whatever, but I don't see him being on the top and able to compete with people on the top. I don't see it.
So I'm going to hold the judgment on whether he's ready or not, but I think before I could say that, I would need to see him step up against someone, that we know is at least proven. And so, but what I can say about him, he put bad intentions on some of his shots. And, yeah, he got a guy who wasn't necessarily touching him back, per se, or he just got off before the guy could get off. But, he was throwing some pretty big shots. And from how I remember him earlier, he looked stronger. He looked stronger. And, I mean, that could be a number of things that is helping him to be stronger. But, I mean, the guy looked stronger. He was throwing them power shots with a little speed, too. But, again, he wasn't fighting nobody who was throwing punches back, or at least the guy didn't get off the way they, like you said, they painted the fight that it was going to be a great fight or whatever, but the guy didn't get an opportunity to throw shots back. So he literally was jabbing. He was throwing a hard jab and throwing them overhand hooks and all type of hooks and just leading with the hook and landing and stuff. It was just kind of fast. And I mean, it's too early to speak on somebody like that. Like, everybody do well. Most matchmakers put you in with guys that you're supposed to beat, and you look very invincible early. But it's only when you start stepping it up that you start to look more and more normalized. So until the end, it ain't, you know, I can say positive, negative, you know, who cares? Let's see him fight somebody who throw punches back, and then we can get more knowledge on him.
Well, hopefully, Oscar will put him in position to get him those type of fights. I think that they'll, you know, slowly get him in there with the likes of a Von Mendy or something like that before he goes against one of those top guys there in the lightweight division. But, you know, there are some people out there that do have a little bit of faith within Ryan Garcia. And maybe one of the callers that's coming in here is one of those people. 646, you're now on the Boxing Sports Radio Show.
Nah, fuck that. Mike Grady on his bullshit already, JR. Nah. Y'all gonna give Canelo Alvarez the goddamn respect that he deserves. What's all this? Oh, he need to be in there with somebody that's throwing punches. You think Kovalev didn't want to knock this dude out? He couldn't.
Wait, man.
Okay.
Hey, hold on, Matt. Wait. Time out, Matt. We're talking about Ryan Garcia right now. We're not talking about Canelo.
Hey, man,
oh,
blow up at me, man.
Wait, rewind. Wait, hold on.
You don't even know what we're talking about,
man. Wait. All right, look, I'm not here to talk about the past. Let's talk about Ryan Garcia right now, man.
All right, so devote that energy toward Ryan Garcia. With what I said to what Ryan Garcia, what do you think?
Nah, I think you're absolutely right. I apologize. Yeah, we need to see. We need to see Ryan Garcia in there with a live body. You know, I just found it interesting that people claim that he was scared of this Duno guy.
Man, yo. Brian Kenny actually said it during the fight. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, come on. They even had articles saying that Ryan Garcia had no problems fight Romero Duno in that car. They just didn't want to work out no deal good enough at that particular time to, you know, have him fight at that date. So that's why it was pretty much easy to make this fight at this particular date. And it probably was a better move for him to do it at this date instead of being there on the
short
card with Jaime Munguia.
Short money.
Yeah.
For short money. That's crazy. But at the end of the day, Ryan Garcia did what he had to do. You know, the funny thing is Ryan Garcia starting to look like a little mini killer with Reynoso, man. Listen, Reynoso.
That's what I'm saying. He's starting to get stronger. For whatever reasons, he's starting to get stronger for whatever reason. That's what I said.
Hey, Reynoso, baby. He's sitting down on his punches more. You can see he's throwing with more confidence. He's throwing with bad intentions now. You know, this dude, he's not scared, man. And he's aggressive. I like what Reynoso is doing with him because Ryan Garcia is a very good athlete. He's young. He's strong. And I think that Reynoso is just bringing it out of him. And sparring with Canelo can't hurt.
Yeah, being around there working with Canelo was you know, something that Ryan Garcia could use to his advantage, you know, later on down the line. So I think that is, you know, something that is good for him. Just would be interested to see, you know, what happens for him later on down the line in the middleweight division. So, I mean, middleweight, lightweight division. And
well,
like
I
was saying, all of those
now.
Contenders that are out there.
He's the silver champ what? Now, so.
With, like, champ in reference to what, though? Like, he has a, what is this, a silver lightweight championship?
Yeah,
so
he's going
to. That is
going
to be, you know, he'll soon get his opportunity. They'll put him in the top five in the WBC rankings there with this particular win. But, hey, maybe, you know, he could fight Gervonta Tank Davis for that number one spot.
Nah, that's not going to happen. That's suicide right now.
And what do you guys use today? Barbecue, whatever, what's the phrase
yeah.
you guys use?
That's
barbecue chicken alert.
Yeah, that, he ain't ready for that. Let's not get crazy now. I fuck with King Rod, but he ain't getting no wins off a Tank right now.
Oh, man. Yeah, so, I mean, that's what they got there for Ryan Garcia in the lightweight division. But, you know, since he, you know, got you on here, of course you did come in with that rant about Canelo Alvarez.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. I'm not here to talk about the past. I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Oh, man. So Kovalev didn't take a dive then.
Yo, but why you ain't stop me in the middle of my rant though? Why you let me keep going? Damn.
I was like, yo, he was going off. He was super heated.
I was about to say, it feel like he had something pent up inside of him or something.
Yeah.
like he been waiting on this one.
He was waiting, yo. He was more eager than someone in a double dutch contest about to jump in. I was
man.
That was funny, that man. But yo, just continuing in on the show, man. For those that are listening in live, you could call in 347-237-5539. Now, I was, you know, on site at the MGM National Harbor. They had the PBC on FS1 card. Main event was Brian Carlos Castaño against Wally Omotoso. Castaño, there as the former super welterweight champion, which is, you know, kind of weird because he held the WBA super welterweight championship. He defended it, you know, I guess one or two times. Then earlier this year, you know, he fought Eric Landy Lara, and it ended up being a draw. So what I'm trying to figure out is, if it was a draw, how did he lose that title? Like, that didn't make much sense to be there, man. But here he was able to be in. What was that?
Wanted the rematch, and he didn't want to do the rematch.
Oh, so they – oh, man. So they said, hey, take the rematch or we're going to, you know, take that title from you. And he was like, I ain't going to do that. So – I guess that's pretty much what it was there, but he's still, you know, unbeaten going into this fight against Wally Omotoso. Not sure if you know, saw this fight live on FS1. Wally Omotoso, of course. Wally Omotoso, you know, going in there, he did take out Curtis Stevens. In his last fight, there was at the Barclays Center in August by TKO. But he was trying to go off the momentum of that because he had been, you know, winning one fight, losing the next fight, winning the fight after that, lose the next fight. But he didn't really have much against Castaño. Castaño was looking really sharp. Was looking, you know, very fast there against Omotoso. And Omotoso ended up injuring his left arm, but I didn't think I think that he kind of, you know, used that as a bailout plan of sorts, because he was getting beat in one of those previous rounds. He was getting hit with a flurry of punches that he had to go into survival mode. So, you know, the ring doctors pretty much called the bout for Brian Carlos Castaño to have him go to 16 wins, 0 losses, and 1 draw. He gets some minor title from the WBO in the super welterweight division. I don't see that kind of like making him be a direct contender to Jaime Munguia's WBO world title, but maybe they could set something up for him later on down the line to have maybe another fight and contend for the WBA super welterweight title that J-Rock Williams has. So that's, you know, kind of like what I got out of that particular fight, other than the, you know, being there and the DJ kind of like screwing up a bunch of songs in between fights. Like, one thing I've never, I'll tell you this, this is like the first time in the history of like me being at a fight card where the introductions happen for each fighter, and when the referee does his instructions, the DJ plays music while the referee does the instructions, you know. But on the flip side, they also didn't have someone in the ring doing the announcing. The guy was Brian Flores. Was there, he was the commentator and he was the ring announcer, so he was doing all that being at ringside. So that kind of was a funny little thing there that happened in this particular instance. You also had Javier Fortuna stop Jesus Cuellar in that co-feature bout in the card, where you had Javier Fortuna. Every time they were in close quarters, Javier Fortuna would crack Cuellar, and Cuellar would go down to the canvas. And so, you know, I guess Cuellar just couldn't take those punches from Javier Fortuna. I mean, Cuellar is a, you know, former featherweight champion, and, you know, also competed at the super featherweight division briefly. But going up to lightweight, nah. Especially when he got cracked by Tank Davis at, you know, super featherweight. Yeah, he wanted to move up to lightweight. Not a good move by him. So that's, you know, all they got there from, you know, that particular fight card. Not sure if y'all saw any of the other fights that were on FS1 or FS2, but you had, like, Ryan Cowboy Carl that was fighting out there and almost got cracked, and he ended up winning because his opponent got injured. And you had Gary Antoine Russell, part of the FS2 card as well, where he, you know, threw a right hand and was able to floor his opponent there in the first round to get a win. So that's what, you know, I got out of that fight card. And over on ESPN, you had the WBC Super Featherweight Championship. Miguel Burchelt fighting Jason Sosa. Burchelt defending that WBC title for like the seventh time or something like that. He's had that WBC title for a while. You know, going up against Jason Sosa, you know, who was a, you know, former champion in, you know, the super featherweight division, but ended up losing to Vasily Lomachenko. He looked like he was going to be, you know, fairly competitive here, in this fight against Burchelt, but Burchelt uses power shots to break down Jason Sosa, and a body shot, a left hook to the body, just crumbled Jason Sosa before the end of the fourth round, and then he was able to get up from that, but then another body shot before the end of that round took him out. And so Burchelt wins by KO to go to 37-1 and retain that WBC Super Featherweight Championship. And he'll most likely end up fighting Oscar Valdez, who was former WBO featherweight champion, instead of fighting our guy, Jermell Herring, who has the WBO Super Featherweight Championship. That's mainly, what we had over the course of the weekend, other than the Canelo-Kovalev fight. So, any thoughts about those, any of those other fights?
I ain't really care.
Oh, man. Not even the Burchelt fight?
Especially not the Burchelt fight. Who gives a shit about Jason Sosa?
Oh, man.
He is who he has always been, because Mike watched the fights, by the way. I just want to put it out there. Jason Sosa is who he has always been. Like, he started, like, round one quasi-competitive, and then he just, like, blocked shots with his head, and then he get hurt and just super compromised, and people – that's going – man, I hate to say this, but he the type of fighter who going to seriously get hurt in the fight game. And I just – I don't know. Like, whoever care about this man need to either put him against lower competition and continue letting him fight like that, but anytime he step up and fight these – guys who matter, the dude get knocked out viciously. He need to let it go, man.
He does.
Or, like, let go fighting better guys.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that Jason Sosa would bring a lot more to the table than he did, considering the fact that he's a former champion. But he quickly let us down within that fight. That 5'5", minimal armless, something like that. He's a small guy. That's all to it, you know. But like I said, sometimes you expect more out of someone that's been a former champion. But, you know, the Burchelt, definitely admirable, 6'7", defense of his belt, things like that. But you know what? And he has great size, because in the fight he came in at 145 pretty much once he rehydrated. But the thing about him, even though he throws power shots after power shots after power shots, this dude is—he's not a clean, fluid puncher. He throws more. It's almost like he's too muscular for that division. You know, I don't know if he's just dehydrating back up too much. But as I continue to watch him, good output, great output. We know that. But he's not a clean, precise puncher at all. And someone that's accurate and has good speed can easy and good and of course good defense can definitely beat him. And, of course, we're looking at people like Jermell Herring, possibly a Tevin Farmer, people like that. But at this point, Burchelt is pretty much just avoiding those fights at this point. So, but it is what it is. So hopefully we'll – and that's why I'm looking for so much forward to next week, because hopefully when Herring gets – Jermell Herring gets there against Lamont Roach, he can definitely showcase his skills and hopefully create – somewhat of a more public demand on why Burchelt and Harris should get together and fight and unify. So that's what I'm hoping for next week.
Yeah, that fight, that's going to be happening November 9th between Jermell Herring and Lamont Roach Jr. for that WBO Super Featherweight Championship. That is going to kind of shape what else could happen there in the super featherweight division later on down the line. Now, I did mention that Miguel Burchelt is most likely facing Oscar Valdez. you know, for that WBC belt. But there, you know, may be other available fights that are out there in the super featherweight division. In particular, a possible unification bout between Jermell Herring and Andrew Cancio. You know, because Cancio said that, you know, he, you know, didn't necessarily have much of an issue for him to fight Jermell Herring. So that's kind of like what, you know, what is out there that could shape up in the super featherweight division. There is also one other world champion there at super featherweight, but he might be the odd man out, and that is Tevin Farmer. we had some news with Tevin Farmer here over the past day, as he was being, you know, worked into potentially fight Joseph Jojo Diaz to defend that IBF super featherweight championship. But apparently that fight broke down as Jojo Diaz posted on social media that he was not able to agree to the offer that was sent out by Farmer's team, and that he said that it was not lucrative enough given the overall, you know, overall potential revenue that could come from that bout. You know, Jojo Diaz is a fairly popular fighter. You know, there, that's, you know, I think he's still there with Golden Boy Promotions, and Tevin Farmer is the, you know, long-standing super featherweight champion there with the IBF title. But I guess, you know, the negotiations fell apart with the type of deal that was being offered from Farmer's side over to Jojo Diaz's side. So right now, Tevin Farmer is holding the empty bag, you would say, as he did, you know, pass on taking the deal with Tank Davis there at super featherweight to have a unification. And so he's been looking for a fight to, you know, be in place of that. But the Jojo Diaz fight is not going to be one that he's going to end up having in heaven. So I guess Kenichi Ogawa or somebody there at super featherweight will, you know, be available for Tevin Farmer, or he's just going to be, you know, on the shelf for a good, you know, good little time there while no IBF title. So it's basically, you know, going to suck for him out there. Just, you know, a little bit to kind of like look ahead to what's happening over the course of the next week. You do have World Boxing Super Series final that will happen over in the bantamweight division. Naoya Inoue going up against Nonito Donaire, and it will be on November 7th, not November 9th. It will be on November 7th. Yes, that's Thursday over in Japan for the WBA and IBF bantamweight championships. Naoya Inoue is, you know, viewed as a top 10 pound-for-pound fighter, a multi-division world champion, has been basically a buzzsaw within the flyweight, super flyweight, and bantamweight divisions. Well, actually, he was in the light flyweight division. He wasn't. He skipped the flyweight division. He went from light flyweight to super flyweight. And then over the bantamweight. So now he is trying to see if he could defeat Nonito Donaire, one of the veterans in the sport there in the lower weight classes, to win that Super World Boxing Super Series title, and then, you know, maybe go ahead and become a undisputed champion. later on down the line at bantamweight or try to move up to super bantamweight, which I don't think he's going to do real soon. But I would like thoughts on this bout that's going to happen on Thursday. I'm going to start with Matt.
I'm taking Donaire. I think every Hall of Fame fighter has that one last gasp, and I think this is it for him. He hasn't taken a lot of punishment over the last couple years, I want to say, due to some of the bizarre circumstances in his previous fights in the World Boxing Super Series. So I think he's still fresh, and I think he's going to end up being able to outbox and outmaneuver the younger, more inexperienced anyway.
Matt, did you say you got Donaire?
Yeah.
I remember on this show, and yes, we are going to talk about the past, you said when both these guys got in position for this fight, you said Donaire's going to be served up this barbecue chicken. So now you have a totally different thing.
Listen, I'm not here to talk about the past, all right? I'm just telling you. I changed my mind. Can a man change his mind?
I guess so. You must have watched the tape or something.
No, I mean, he did, you know, Donaire did have that, you know, instance with Ryan Burnett where Burnett, you know, injured himself during the fight and, you know, pretty much had to, you know, call the fight off there within the fight. And then he ends up fighting Stephen Young, who, Stephen Young was a replacement as well in the World Boxing Super Series. You know, so, yeah, Donaire has had a couple of breaks here in his World Boxing Super Series. But now, you know, he's going up against this, Buzzsaw, guy, the monster, Naira Inoue. I'm not seeing this, man. I mean, you know, anyways, had his streak of knocking out his opponents. You know, we had that first round knockout of Juan Carlos Payano and was able to, you know, dispatch of Emmanuel Rodriguez in the semifinals here. So, you know, that's what we got coming up in this particular, you know, in this particular point is that is trying to, you know, solidify himself as, you know, trying to be one of the best guys that's in those lower weight classes. And if he has an emphatic victory over Nonito Donaire, that's going to, you know, raise a few eyebrows, a few more eyebrows, I would say, there within the bantamweight division. And I think he's, you know, going to stay there for a little while, or at least until I would say Navarrete or Ray Vargas moves up, because I think those guys with, you know, height and reach, length, a lot of length, I think they will be able to give him problems, particularly Navarrete. I think Navarrete would give Inoue a lot of problems in that super bantamweight division. So I'm not really seeing him kind of like moving up to super bantamweight to take that particular fight. You also have, like, on November 9th, you have our guy defending the WBO super featherweight championship, Jamel Herring against Lamont Roach Jr. That is what they, you know, have set up. Trying to see what else they kind of like worked in, because as of right now, that is, I guess that's going to be a special fight there over in Fresno, California. There's nothing else on that particular card. So that is going to be Lamont Roach's first fight for a world championship. He's, you know, slowly moved himself up in the ranks, being at 19-0-1. he did have like a minor super featherweight championship to be at the time the top contender for the WBO super featherweight title before they put Oscar Valdez up there. He had his last win by unanimous decision over Jonathan Oquendo. So he's, you know, kind of like preparing himself for this bout against Jamel Herring, but he's going to be, you know, dealing with someone that has a, you know, very good jab and is a lot taller and has a good reach advantage in Jamel Herring. So he's going to have to, you know, work a little bit in order to, you know, get inside Jamel Herring. And Jamel Herring is definitely ready, and he's definitely, you know, prepared himself for this particular bout, you know, training with the likes of Terrence Crawford and other top fighters that are out there. Terrell, you got any thoughts on this upcoming fight?
No, I mean, honestly, I'm pulling for Donaire. Definitely always been a big fan of his and everything. And like I said, it's just kind of, it'll be a great, even greater story to submit what he's done for him to go ahead and grab that, the belt, unify whatever, and also grab the Muhammad Ali trophy within the final of this tournament at that division. But he's finding pretty much a phenomenal fighter, someone who I think is probably somewhat special, has special power for that division, for the lower classes. You don't typically see that someone with that type of power like that at the lower classes. But once again, Donaire's a veteran. He knows how to box. He knows he's already heard about the power. They're studying their opponent. They probably have been to some of his fights or whatever. But bottom line, they've been studying the opponent. So he's going to know how to hopefully slip some of the punches, get in there, get used to the power, hopefully stay in position. And once again, the best defense is offense, right? So hopefully he can get in there and fire back some things of substance to keep anyway away from him and take him out of the game plan, take him away from his power, stay out of the corner, your typical things in order to see in a boxing match. So it's going to be interesting. And, I mean, I'm pulling for Donaire. However, my gut tells me it's probably not going to happen that way. It's probably going to be a couple of knockdowns for it anyway. But once again, if Donaire can come here and slip some punches and execute a game plan and show some blood and guts, he can perhaps come out with a victory. So we'll see.
Yeah, true. That's going to be a fairly intriguing bout between Inouye and Donaire. just have to see, you know, what the condition of Donaire will be in that particular bout. What do you think about the thing with Herring and Lamont Roach?
Well, even with Herring, one thing I've been appreciative about following him, he looks to be in phenomenal shape. He's been in shape for quite some time. He's getting good input from Terrence Crawford, who's a somewhat of a stablemate like that. But even despite that, bottom line, you have to go in there and execute your own game plan. No one can help you out but you and your trainer at that point. So he's in great shape. He's been showing some great pictures on Twitter, things like that, which we appreciate. But and at the same time, my main thing with him now, he's now the hunted. And we said this before, he's not the one that's been hunted. So that mentality is different now when you're on that chase for your first world title. He finally has it, but like I said, now his position. He's a title holder at this point. So what can he do in order to block out all the negativity from just people that don't like him, the critics, things like that, and of course being a champion? And will he behave like a champion? That's the most important question. Will you not behave as a champion now that you're a belt holder? So, I mean, Roach, first world title shot, we'll see. But you know what? This is why I love boxing. Because you know what? Despite what you've done, despite what you are, your name is, and so, where you come from, bottom line is two dudes getting in the ring to fight. And who doesn't like a good fight? I think we all do at this point. But like I said, that's why I love boxing. Good fight.
Yeah, it should be a good little scrap there between Jamel Herring and Lamont Roach. And, you know, like you were saying there, Herring is, you know, preparing himself, you know, kind of like, you know, more than a lot of other fighters that are out there in a particular weight class. And so Lamont Roach does have a lot that he's going to be dealing with in this fight coming up on November 9th. So we will be on the lookout to see what happens there on November 9th at that fight for that WBO Super Featherweight Championship. Other news that is out there for that weekend, we do have, you know, that fight card between KSI and Logan Paul where, you know, we'll see what ends up happening with that.
Nah, I'm out.
You know,
I'm out.
Well,
I'm out.
There's one thing that, and I don't know if this is, I still don't know if this is official or whatnot, but apparently Devin Haney will be part of that card.
Yeah, that's
and
official.
And he will be defending that WBC lightweight championship against Alfredo Santiago. As far as I know, I didn't see any Alberto Santiago in the rankings there for lightweight in the top 15. So it apparently that was, you know, due to one of the fighters within that top 15 not being able to be available for that. So that's why I guess he guess Devin Haney was able to get the exception to fight someone outside of the top 15. And Matt, do you have any more on that as far as like who, you know, who wasn't available at that particular point for November 9th?
Well, from what I've been told, what's this guy's name? Peter Petrov. Yeah, he was actually rejected by the WBC as a potential opponent for Devin Haney on this card for some reason. Not too sure why, because he's a decent fighter. You know, he's won his last three fights, all of them this year. He did fight Ivan Baranchik. He did fight Terry Flanagan. So he has fought competition that is, I would say, on the level of fighting a Devin Haney for a title. So I'm not sure why he was rejected, but what I do know is that the WBC rejected him and they accepted this new guy, Santiago, who is ranked number 17 in their lightweight rankings.
Yeah, that's the thing is that usually with the WBC, you would have to fight someone else within the top 15.
Yeah, but it could be that
they
bypassed that because
this
guy became champion like
pretty much
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, because the thing about it is was that he wasn't really supposed to, you know, be the WBC champion, but I guess you know they wanted to, you know, answer to the call of Bob Arum in Top Rank, say, hey, you know, go ahead and make another one of those franchise belts, please, and go ahead and hand it over to Vasyl Lomachenko. So that's what they ended up doing in that case, and you know, that's what we got. And that's why, you know, Devin Haney, you know, even though he, like he was saying that he wanted to be part of that fight card on November 9th, but this time he, you know, has that WBC World Lightweight Championship there, so he does have to defend it in that particular fight card. And, you know, that's, you know, the other thing that I wanted to bring up. I'm not going to bring up anything else in reference to that fight card. You know, of course, even with Billy Joe Saunders in that card, we went through who his opponent was in the last show. So I'm not going to, you know, touch into that. You know, with that being said, I wanted to just put this particular episode to a close. You'll be able to, I'll be kind of like figuring out if I'm going to do a show next Sunday. There may be something there that maybe would force me to preempt that or to like have it at a different date. So you'll get an update on that later in the week. But in the meantime, you could catch the sister shows here on the Go Long Media channel on Blog Talk Radio. That includes the Cohort Truth on Sports that's on a Tuesday night there. But in this case, put it into this podcast. Like I say, at the end of every show, point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade or get, you know, chin checked by Canelo Alvarez like Sergey Kovalev did. But on that note, folks, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Bomb squad, baby.